Well, since we have our football team on the back row today, I knew that I'd had the perfect beginning for today. And it's a phrase that I'm sure they have heard all their practice day life. And that is the phrase, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. You know, how many times have we heard that in life? How many times have coaches hammered us with that? And I think that this morning's text is one of those places. I have to tell you right up front, it's a text I have never enjoyed preaching on. Just because I think it's incredibly difficult. It's incredibly difficult on many levels. It's incredibly difficult to really wrestle and understand what Jesus is saying here. It's incredibly difficult because once you understand it, there is a large portion that wants to turn and run. In fact, it's interesting to me that Jesus never tries to sugarcoat the cost of following Him. He never tells someone that it will be easier than it is. He would be a horrible politician. He never attempts to coerce anyone into staying the course. He tells them how hard it will be, and then He starts leading. Never looking back, really, to even see if they're following or not. Just trusting that those who hear the call, those who are called by His Father, will move with Him. Knowing that it will be a difficult choice and they must make their own choice. You know, Debbie said something, I mentioned this a couple times recently, but that's really stuck with me. You know, she said, you know, God is never codependent. He never does what, you know, He never cajoles us. He never just keeps working it and manipulating it. He offers it to us and He gives us the choice. And this text is just one of those places. It's interesting to me also that whenever the crowds get large, Jesus invariably responds with one of these difficult teachings. Instead of basking in His own glory, He puts the cards on the table and in essence says, okay, are you sure you want to follow Me? And that's exactly what's going on in John chapter 6. It's important, though, as we get into John chapter 6, though, that we remind ourselves of the context, because this whole chapter flows together. In 6:1 through 15, Jesus feeds the multitude. Remember, there's 5,000 men, probably a crowd of 15 to 20,000 people. And Jesus feeds them with a little boy's lunch. And as a result of feeding them with a small boy's lunch, the Messiah ideas are rampant through everyone's heads. Think about what it'd be like to have a military leader who could provide food for the armies when all they have is a small boy's lunch. Think about what it'd be like to have a military leader who can heal the sick, can repair the wounded. So much so that the idea is so strong that in verse 15 it tells us that they attempted to make Jesus king by force. Even though Jesus wasn't going to be that kind of political military Messiah, they attempt to force Him to be that way. But Jesus' response is to send the disciples off in the boat. He says, you guys get out of here, it's not safe. He goes up on the mountainside to pray. And then after He spends His time in prayer in the middle of the night, the disciples are rowing against the wind. They've been fighting the storm all night long. And finally, in the fourth watch of the night, between 3 and 6 a.m., Jesus walks out to them on the water. He walks on the water. They're terrified. They think it's a ghost. He says, no, it is I am. So don't be afraid. The great I am who created everything, who spoke to Moses at the burning bush, who gave His name as I am, responds to the disciples' fears and says, I am. Do not be afraid. And so then when He gets to the other side and the crowd, when they get to the other side the next day and the crowd finds them again, Jesus begins teaching. And it's the great discourse. It's called the Bread of Life discourse. And in this discourse, He declares Himself to be the bread of life. He declares Himself to be the only food that truly nourishes, the only food that satisfies, the only food that leads not to daily sustenance, but to life eternal. And then in the end of this passage that we'll look at today, we see that some desert and some commit. That this teaching is so hard that some say, forget it, I'm out of here. This is getting too weird for me. This is getting too hard for me. I'm leaving. And then others, the disciples, the 12 especially, basically get to a point of desperation where they say, okay, Jesus, we see that nowhere else is there life, but in you, you have the words of life. And so we will stay with you. And so that gets us back to our text for this morning and the discourse. But as we do that, I want us to, this discourse is a long one, really. It starts in verse 25, goes all the way through 59. And it's too much for one bite, one meal. And so we broke it up, and last week, look at verse 22 through verse 25 through 42. But I want us to look back at three points that Jesus made. Three main points that I think really boil it down. The first one is verse 27. Notice what Jesus says. He says, "Do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you." Okay, Jesus' point here is don't work for food that spoils. We spend so much of our energy, so much of our life, working for things that do not last. It's what Harold was talking about during our prayer time. You know, whatever you are working for, if it is not Jesus Christ, it is a food that spoils. If you are working for the approval of others, if you're working for the acceptance of an individual, if you're working for power, prestige, finances, money, etc., etc., at some point it will disappoint you. Jesus says, look, don't work for food that spoils. There is something more important. And so his next point is that there is the one thing to work for is Jesus. Look at verse 29. Jesus answered, "The work of God is this, to believe in the one He sent." Don't work for food that spoils. Do the only work that matters. And that is believe Jesus. Everything else you work for will ultimately leave you hungry. But faith in Jesus fills. And that brings us to the third point where Jesus says, "I am the bread of life." Look at verse 35. Jesus said to them, verse 35. Then Jesus declared, "I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will never go hungry, and he who believes in me will never be thirsty." I am the bread of life. And then read on, verse 36. He says, "But as I have told you, you have seen in me and still you do not believe. All the Father gives to me will come to me, and whoever comes to me I will never drive away. For I have come down from heaven not to do my will, but to do the will of Him who sent me. And this is the will of Him who sent me, that I shall lose none of all that He has given me, but raise them up at the last day. For my Father's will is that everyone who looks to the Son and believes in Him shall have eternal life, and I will raise him up at the last day." At this, the Jews began to grumble about Him because He said, "I am the bread that came down from heaven." They said, "Is this not Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How can He now say, 'I came down from heaven'?"